Welcome to the Music of America podcast, where every week we visit a different state in America and meet a different guest in the music industry. Every day, Monday through Friday, we begin in Alabama and we end in Wyoming. I'm your host, Tom Pollard. Let's talk music here on the Music of America. The Music of America podcast continues still in the state of Washington, and a really fun guest today, Celia Farron, will be with us. She's an island woman, and we're going to find out about living on the islands after we talk about a farm, River Ridge Farm, on the other side of the country in Vermont. It's Vermont recreation lover's dream, a gorgeous vacation rental nestled in the Green Mountains of Vermont. River Ridge Farms, Jeffersonville, is an escape to everything wonderful that Vermont has to offer. It's an historic farmhouse set atop 16 acres of fields with mountainous views, a pasture, a pond, tree-lined river frontage. Go and enjoy this beautiful spot right in the heart of the Green Mountain state of Vermont. Now, along with the multiple nearby ski and mountain resorts, breweries, hiking trails, biking trails, and other tourist activities, this spot is unique due to its unique mountain views and the resident farm animals. Talk to the host, Diana, at River Ridge Farms, Jeffersonville, about interacting with the farm animals. The pigs will love it, and you'll love it too. Or just have a casual and comfortable farm stay at this modern farmhouse that sleeps 11 guests comfortably. There's enough space to throw an event, like, oh, let's say, I don't know, just maybe like a Celia Farron outdoor concert and festival in Vermont, for example. A retirement party, graduation party, or just kick back and relax and rejuvenate in the beautiful Vermont landscape. Check them out. River Ridge Farms, Jeffersonville. They're on Facebook by searching River Ridge Farms, Jeffersonville. Same with Airbnb. You can book through Airbnb, but you've got to go through River Ridge Farms, Jeffersonville to get to this place. Vermont's recreation lover's dream, River Ridge Farms, Jeffersonville. And way over on the other side of the country, on an island, Celia Farron. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here, Tom.
It's so wonderful to have you here. And I'm so happy how quickly we put this together, even though it's at the beginning. So I'm building the studio in my basement. My contractor and I are hanging like one of the last sheets of drywall. I really want to get this done. So I'm rushing, getting that done. I come up here to do this. I've got concrete dust and drywall dust. So thank you and thank you. How long have you been in Washington?
I moved to Whidbey Island, which is where Freeland, Washington is, about 2 years ago.
Wow.
Before that, I got shut down during the shutdowns in Phoenix, Arizona, of all places, which was not my favorite place to be, especially in the summers. Oh, my goodness. But previous to that, I was on the road full time.
Isn't a great music town, though? Phoenix seems to be like a really hopping music town from people.
That could very well be true, but I was there during the shutdown, so all bets are off. Right?
Yeah. And the rest of the time you toured, right?
Yeah, I was on tour for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, home free, on the road, and then the shutdowns happened, and then all of that came to an end for most of us. So, and then about 2 years ago, I moved up here to the Pacific Northwest. So I was a Southwestern person for a long time, hovering around Arizona, kind of come back there between tours and whatnot. And now I'm in a completely different climate, loving it. It's great for songwriting, great for my hair. It's much curlier now. Great for the skin and good for my soul.
It's an audio only, but you got to see this, man. Your hair is like waist long and wavy and curly. Like who's the gal from the Peanuts. That's a Peanuts who always talked about having naturally curly hair. You know.
Oh, I don't know who that was, but you know,
Sally,
they called
Sally.
Me the little.
It was the little daughter.
I thought you meant the little red hair girl because I have red hair as well.
Yeah. No, you got them both going on now. And are you Irish? Yeah. Are you Irish with a name like Farron?
I am. Farron is a name from the northern part of Ireland, Donegal. My great-great-great-grandmother's name is Celia Farron, and she hails from there.
Well, I'll be darned. We're from Cork. Our family is from Cork County.
Oh, that's the other part of my family, Cork and Donegal, north and south.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Maybe we're kin.
We could be.
When did you start? Boy, you've been doing this for a while, touring for years. So I'm assuming you started in high school because you look so young, or junior high.
Oh, that's super sweet of you. Yeah. Well, I did actually. Yeah. I started when I was 5. My first
Oh,
role was I
wow.
played Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer in the Christmas kindergarten pageant, and I was bit. I just
Was
thought that was
wait,
the coolest thing. What's that?
was that you? Was that you?
That
You were
was me.
no
Oh, you saw it? Yeah. That was even
Yes,
before things went viral. So the fact that you were there, that would blow me away. Yeah.
well, you
So
know, I'm a real dedicated fan. That
that
was
was, yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So I started very young performing and was doing really theater and musical theater and choirs and singing. And got my degree from the University of Michigan in theater performance, went to New York City, did a whole theater leg of my career until I realized that I had more power and control with music and being an originator rather than an interpreter. Let me get that word, interpreter. So I started, well, I recorded my first album when I was 16, which Tom and everyone else out there, you will never hear if I have anything to say about it. You will never hear it. But I was writing original music like when I was 13, 14, 15, 16, recorded the album, included all of my siblings on it. I called it Jamams, just me and my siblings.
How fun.
And then went off to do theater and then came back to music and recorded my first album, which was an Irish songs album. Boy, when was that? 1999, 2000. And I've been doing it full time ever since.
So that's a jump, right? To it's one thing to know that you can sing and know that you can perform and know how much fun it is, but it's a jump to say, I'm going to do this for a living. This is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to pay my bills. This is how I'm going to, buy cheese on Thursday or whatever. What inside of you made you know that you can do this?
Oh, what a fantastic question. I'm taken back to a theater professor who sat us down and said, if you can do anything else and be happy, do it. Because this will be one of the hardest choices you will ever make in your life. And I didn't have a doubt in my mind. I said, well, they might need to hear that, but not me. I'm going to make my living as an artist. And I've had great support from my family. My mother is a huge champion. When we were kids, if we showed an interest in something, the dance shoes showed up, or the violin showed up, or the lessons showed up. So there was just always that kind of artistic support in my life. And I knew I had raw talent, and I chose to then hone it and craft it and study. And I just always knew. And I'm also, I call myself a badass bardess now, and I'm a redheaded Capricorn, so I'm fierce.
I love it.
And
A bard ass.
I'm a badass bardess, and I always wanted to be prolific. I wanted to write. I started out doing the Irish songs, and I love that tradition. I love my background there, and I started getting pegged as she's the Irish singer, because if you look at me, I am the spitting image of a Celtic goddess, right, with the red hair and the blue eyes and the fair skin and all that.
I'm ready for a river dance to break out right about now,
That's right. And I was an Irish dancer as a kid too, so I was just steeped in all of this wonderful tradition. I was getting pegged. I was really getting pegged as the Irish singer, and I wanted to create, and I wanted to be doing original material. So my next album after that was, I worked with Willie Porter, who's an amazing musician from Milwaukee, and he helped me produce the Breathe album, which has the I think we're going to listen to the Everyday Goddess song. So that was me branching out from being the Irish singer to being an original artist. And to answer your question, I just always knew, and I'm the kind of person, if I make up my mind, so it is, so be it. And I
Now,
and yeah,
see.
it's been hard. Yeah, it's not easy. It takes courage, it takes grit, it takes vats of blood, sweat, and tears, and swimming with the sharks. And I wouldn't have it any other way. It's
Kind
now my way of life.
of like what that made me think of a Woody Allen line from a movie. He says, life is full of, horror and misery and pain and disparity, and it's all over much too quickly.
Right. Yeah.
But well, you brought up Everyday Goddess, which is the first song we want to listen to. And so you're not the Everyday Goddess, or are you the Everyday Goddess? I can take this a couple of ways. It could be autobiographical, or it could be an homage to your mother.
Yeah, it could be so many things. I started writing that song when I was living in New York City, and I was taking Celtic mythology class, and I learned about the three stages of the feminine, which is the maiden, the mother, and the crone. And I wrote that the little riff, you know, it's really no big deal. I'm just an everyday god as well. I was walking from place to place in New York City, and I wasn't sure the world was ready for this idea or this song. And when I brought all my songs to Willie Porter for that Breathe album, he said, we need a couple of more. We need to just kind of flesh this out. What else do you have? And I just started rattling off songs that I had a little bit here, a little bit there, a snippet, you know, the files that we have of ideas.
Yeah.
And I said, I got this song. I got this song. I got this song. I got Everyday Goddess. He said, do that. I was like, what? It was a stretch for me. I wasn't sure that I was really comfortable with those words and saying those things or claiming it or owning it.
Yeah.
And it ended up being one of the most popular songs on that album. And I found out that lots of women wanted to identify with being a goddess. And now, you know, anything goes. Anybody who wants to identify with the goddess energy. And so to answer your question, it started out as a concept.
Yeah.
And I have now become known as the everyday goddess herself, you know. And it was scary at first to sing that. Now I've owned it. Now it's, yes, absolutely.
Right.
I'm an everyday goddess. And so are you. And so are you. And so are you, if you so choose.
I love it. I love it. It's an I am woman of the 21st century. You know,
yeah.
It's so cool. It's such a good testimony song. We're going to listen to it now. Celia Farren, our guest here from Whidbey Island in Freeland, Washington. Right? Whidbey? I said that right?
That's right. Whidbey.
How about that? Mm-hmm. Whidbey. Whidbey or wouldn't be. Whidbey.
People say Whidbey sometimes, and there's jokes. I have all kinds of things.
Imagine. But we're going to listen to the song. Everyday Goddess is the song here on the Music of America podcast.
It's really no big deal. And you said Everyday Goddess.
She's a mother up to work. She is driving in her car. She's a goddess in the elevator, rising like a star. They say she's working like a man, but they don't understand. She's dancing with the goddess in her heart. She's that woman on the phone. She's smoothing out a deal. And though her back is aching, she's a goddess in high heels. She works 6 a.m. to 3, and it may be hard to see, but the beauty of the goddess runs deep.
It's really no big deal, I'm just an everyday goddess, doing all my goddess duties, trying to find a way. I am the maiden and the mother and the clone, but it's really no big deal, it's just another day.
She's a goddess in a skirt, lonely legs. She can drop you to your knees and make you beg. We are obsessed with her body, but we don't see that the beauty of the goddess lies beneath. She's a goddess on the job, a goddess in your bed, a goddess for the children, and she keeps her family fed. Your queen, she's the everyday goddess of your world.
It's really no big deal, I'm just an everyday goddess, doing all my goddess duties, trying to find a way. I am the maiden and the mother and the crone, but it's really no big deal, it's just another day.
Everyday Goddess From Whidbey Island in Freeland, Washington, our guest today is Cela Farren on the Music of America podcast. I'm your host, Tom Pollard. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day about my brother's couples workbook called 2 Years After Forever and everything that that title implies. It's sort of a how-to guide to improve your communication skills, which, as anyone that's ever been in any relationship knows, is crucial. So we spoke later in the conversation. I mentioned the book again. You know, 2 Years After Forever, that's the name of the book I said my brother wrote. She stops me and says, wait, your brother's book? I thought you meant a book you borrowed from your brother. Those three words, my brother's book, two entirely different interpretations. Well, in the book, 2 Years After Forever, there are exercises that help you form better communicative skills to avoid pratfalls like that one, to help understand each other, to help hear each other. Along with your partner, learning and applying these exercises will help you get back on track to why 2 years ago, maybe, you pledged your life together forever. 2 Years After Forever, 2yearsafterforever.com, available at Amazon today and forever. Our guest, Cela Farren, from Freeland, Washington. Since I've never been to Freeland, Washington, I've never been to Whidbey Island. Give me an idea where that's located. I'm guessing it's coastal. Sure.
It is, yeah. So if you know where Seattle is, you go a little bit north, you go a little bit west, you get on a ferry at Mukilteo, you ride the ferry for about 20 minutes, and you hit Whidbey Island.
How fun. How fun. I just love the idea of that part of the country, but I don't think humidity and I don't get along very well, so I don't know how I would stand being up there.
Well, we do get a lot of rain, but yeah. Honestly, where you're at in the Midwest, way more humid.
Well, that's why I go to Vermont in summer.
Ah, that makes good sense. Yeah, I love Vermont.
Oh, you've been there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Have you played out there, or have you just gone there?
I did many moons ago. I've been to every
stop that.
State.
You're not many moons old. Stop it. Okay.
I am probably a lot older than you think, but I've played in, I think, at least traveled through every state aside from Alaska. That's on my list.
Really? Well, before you go, I've made some really, really good friends in Alaska. Some incredible talent up in Anchorage and Juneau. And I would love to have you meet them because your style is real similar to a couple of singer-songwriters women that I've dealt with that, you got a certain sass about you, which is fun, you know, and you've got that gift. You've got that it quality in terms of your singing and songwriting. And I think you'd fit in perfect with.
I'd love that.
Thank you.
And the songs that I've given you to share today are there. I do have a very sassy side to my music as well. Playful songs, a lot of tongue in cheek, innuendo. I have a song that, and some of them I still need to record. Like one of them is about coffee or doing laundry and playing washboards and silly songs like "You're not weird, you're just weird." And so I have this whole, and I have a comedy aspect of my career. So because of the theater background, which you'll relate to, I used to do a lot more comedy where I do something very Brechtian and I would change my hair and put on some glasses and a little sort of color or something to change my persona and then do that character. And most of those characters would play music. So the most popular is the Trestle Foot Fairy. She's a little pink fairy who is irreverent yet innocent. And her most popular song is Dr. Bronner's Makes Your Hoo-Hoo Tingle. And for those out there who don't know what Dr. Bronner's is, there's many different scents, but there is a peppermint soap, and it indeed does make your hoo-hoo or your ho-ho tingle, and anyone who's had the experience really understands the song.
That's hilarious. I have neither the peppermint nor the hoo-hoo ho-hos. So...
Yeah,
I'm gonna take your word on that one.
Yes, please do. Anyone who has used it knows.
When you write, do lyrics come first, or do you just hum around the house one day and say, "Oh, I like that," and then start writing music that goes with it, or is it kind of a combination of the two, or what's your process?
I love this question. For me, it all comes at once.
No way.
Music, lyrics at the same time, and it comes anywhere, anytime, any day. And I'm very kinesthetic, so some of my best writing happens when I'm walking or moving or driving or on a train. So I take songwriting walks. I consider my hikes through the woods and this area where I live, I call it the land of the mermaids and fairies because there's moss on everything and ferns
Oh,
and
awesome.
greenery and ocean waters, the sound and all of those things. So I write when I'm walking. And there's so
That's
many
unique.
beautiful, beautiful places to walk here. And if anybody else were in the forest, they think I was this crazy lady muttering to myself, singing songs, and then trying to do something new in a different melody or different lyric. And then I bring my phone with me and I record pieces and parts. And I am in a singer-songwriter group where we get a prompt every week, and I write and record a song every week, and then I make
Wow.
those songs available to my Patreon subscribers. So there's over 240 songs available there that are separate from the 14 albums that I have. So I think I mentioned earlier, I really wanted to be prolific earlier on in my career, and I've definitely achieved that. And I love being able to write about anything, whether it's washboards or coffee, or sometimes you get a penalty prompt because you're late or something, and cantankerous caterpillars. I had to put that into a song, and it only made the song better. So I love the process. I love how it's like my muse comes, and there's a I have a joke in one of my songs. I have a polyamorous relationship with the muse because there's so many of them. And I never understood writer's block. I have the absolute opposite problem. It's more about, okay, I just pull it from the ethers. And one of my specialties is you could tell me a story or something that needed to turn into a theme or a song, and I would go away and I'd come back, and in 3 minutes I'd be able to put everything in it. And I love that. I love what music can do, how a song can tell a story or drop a message that other medias don't quite have that same capacity or that same depth. And I love writing songs that are funny and playful and witty. And I love writing songs that are meaningful and spiritual and deep and philosophical. I like writing songs that are have to do with social justice or advocacy, songs for the earth. I usually do an Earth Day concert every year. So I have, and each year I have such a hard time picking the songs because I have so many songs in like the goddess, earth, nature, because I write songs in the woods, right? So
Good.
I've got those types of songs. I love being able to write about anything
So
and playing.
Would you say that your muse is nature in itself?
I'd say it's one of them, but again, polyamorous.
Yeah, but nature is polyamorous. So
right.
It's not just the clouds, it's the stars, it's the rain, it's the dew, it's the moss, it's the rushing water, it's the mountain stream. And they all
Absolutely.
Speak to you. And I love that because that's where I get inspired. I just don't know how to say it. I've not learned how to release, to have the muse talk to me. And I have a theory. I have a theory about this. You think of like McCartney, Goffin, Carole King, James Taylor, all these great songwriters of my era. They just stopped writing. And why did they stop writing? And I think, this is my theory, I think that cynicism chases away the muse. And if not, that's a hell of a song.
I scared the muse away. I got
my
too
cynicism
cynical.
Scared away the muse. Yeah. So anyway, I think there's something to that. There's a reason why McCartney doesn't write anymore. Why Elton John wrote, and him and Taupin wrote all those wonderful songs 50 years ago, and then they just stopped. What happened? What happened? Madonna
That's a
wrote
really
these
good question.
I
wonder also if there's just a certain saturation that happens, or maybe I couldn't top that. So let's just let it be where it is. You know, I think artists who become so famous and so well known for their songs then get put under a lot more scrutiny by the public. And so it becomes a much more challenging thing to come up with the next best thing and the next best thing and the next best thing. And we tend to be our own worst critics, and perfectionism is one of the fastest ways to shut ourselves down. And that's I release a song even if I don't think it's a good song. I wrote a song called Symbol that I didn't think was a good song, and it helped change history. And probably my proudest song that I've written. And
no kidding.
Feels so fortunate to have had the the courage to release it, even though I didn't necessarily think it was a good song. But I love paraphrasing Woody Guthrie, who said, it's not how good a song is. It's what good a song does.
Oh, that's wonderful. I've not heard that.
Isn't that the best?
It really
and
is.
That's what that song did in particular. And to have people come to me and say, this song changed my life. This song saved my life. I was on the brink. I had the gun in my hand. And this song came on. I mean, that's what good a song does. It was just the right place in the right time and hit people in the right way. And we have that power as artists. And my sense is, as artists, when we have the microphone, if you're not saying something important, maybe step up your game.
Yeah.
And it's almost a sense, and that's the bard aspect. We have a sense of responsibility, not just to necessarily make beautiful music. Why are you making beautiful music? Have something to say. And I've had the opportunity to do, that's more of the advocacy work, like the Symbol Song, which became known as the anthem to the Pentacle Quest. So folks who were fighting as soldiers in our military weren't being honored with the emblem of their belief on their grave marker upon their death. And to me, that stands for my values of freedom of religion.
Right.
No matter what religion that is, no matter if somebody else doesn't think it's a legitimate religion or doesn't honor it, that doesn't matter. It needs to be honored because that's what we are here for.
That's the whole freedom of religion is supposed to be. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what's supposed to make all of us free. So it just struck a chord in me. So I stepped away from the computer when I heard that news and I wrote a song called Symbol, and that really changed my career dramatically. And I knew it was a risk.
Yeah,
because I knew that I'd be sticking my neck out, and I couldn't not do it because it was important. It was an important thing to say. And then there's a couple of other projects that I've done. One is I have a song on the Green album, which is called my song is called I Will Not. And it was all these artists who came together to use the album to buy land in the rainforest so that it couldn't be bought or cut down or turned into developments. So there it is. Like what good does this song do? And what am I willing to say about it? As well as a beautiful song or a love song or a song that's going to make somebody smile, like Dr. Bronner's makes your hoo-hoo tingle. It's like all of
it. Or Red Alabaster and Blue. Just that title. It's just such a beautiful image. Red Alabaster. Close your eyes. Close your eyes and put those together. Red Alabaster and Blue. And what do you see? It's just a gorgeous whatever. To me, it was a sunset, red, alabaster, and blue. So blue sky after a rainstorm, after a thunderstorm. The sky is a little bit red from the sunset, but the sky's still alabaster blue. Or it's still blue because of, you know, it's all clean now and all the clouds are gone. The air is perfect and pure. That's me.
Wow.
What
that's
did you
cool
get?
To hear that.
What did you get? Where did red, alabaster, and blue, where did that come from and what is
it? It came from to quote the song, my hair is red, skin's alabaster, and I'm blue. So this song, actually, it's a great segue because this song would really go into social justice.
Yeah.
And when you hear the lyrics, you know, I'll say he's an American too, she's an American too, I'm an American too. And I'm not talking about countries, I'm talking about, or borders, I'm talking about human beings. You know,
right.
I'm a very much a humanitarian. So every person has the right to dignity. And that's what this song speaks to. And when I sing it live, it's very powerful. And I really try to include different scenarios of different people who are human beings and to really honor and respect the human experience, no matter what shape we are, size we are, gender we are, how we choose to live our lives, what our faith is, what we look like. And that's what this song is about.
And what a good song it is, Ollie. Now, so that's an old reference. It's a Laurel and Hardy, you know. Just ruined it. Okay.
Okay. You lost me.
Right. Well, then Oliver and Stan Laurel, Stan Laurel, Oliver Hardy, and Stan.
I know who they are. I just didn't quite
Stan
get
would
the
just
line.
Nod his head sometimes and say, "And what a good story it is, too, Ollie," or whatever. So when he had nothing else,
okay.
Was
now I'm with you now.
His
yeah,
accent
yeah, yeah.
Mark. That's all right. I'll without the, we'll just go on. So the song Red Alabaster and Blue, the guest, Celia Farren from Whidbey Island in Freeland, Washington, here on the Music of America podcast.
He is a young African American male. By the time he hits draft age, he might be dead or live in jail. And he found his life of crime when they said no child left behind. He's an American too. She is 90 with dementia all alone. Well, her family couldn't take it, so they put her in that home. And now she withers down to bones. At night she gently moans. She's an American too. She is a young Hmong refugee, she's four with child. If her daddy finds out, he will go insanely wild. They say they understand her plight, call themselves the Christian Right. She's an American too. And all they wanted was to be free. But greenback dollars can't buy you dignity. Black gold and icebergs separate us from them. It's time to rewrite the master plan. It is terminal, he's sick, he needs a cure. He's a second-class citizen because he's uninsured. And he will leave his family broke, cause our healthcare is a joke. He's an American too. She is a Mexican, she loves her family. She risks her life to cross the border to harvest the trees, and they get dollars to her dime. She works triple time. What she would give to be American too. He is a young, attractive man, and he is gay. Well, they beat him and burned him, then they left him that way. And now the 26th of April is the silent day. He's an Jude, and we're fierce and we're proud, and we serve our sons up loud. We are Americans too, but there was a time they would have torched me without care. Alabaster and I'm blue, and I'm an American too.
Red, Alabaster and Blue, Celia Farin, our guest here on the Music of America podcast. One more song to talk about and a couple more things to talk about after we talk about this. And it concerns women more than men for whatever reason. But women, you don't need big promises. You need results. If you're into skincare and moisturizer, Simple Beauty Retinol Moisturizer contains only the best ingredients for your skin. It doesn't contain unnecessary ingredients that may cause you further skin issues. Specifically formulated, the Retinol Moisturizer helps reduce the appearance of fine lines and wrinkles, making your skin appear younger, softer, smoother. A powerful combination of antioxidants like vitamin A, C, B5, and E fight premature aging by blocking DNA-damaging free radicals and promoting softness and elasticity. In addition, it contains natural ingredients like aloe vera, jojoba oil, rose water, sunflower oil, which are great for alleviating a variety of skin conditions. Simple Beauty Retinol Moisturizer, simplebeautyskincare.com. It simply works. And somebody who needs no skincare products because her skin is naturally alabaster. Celia Farin, our guest here on the Music America podcast.
You're very kind.
My brother asked, we touched a moment ago about like songwriters and stuff, and made me think about something my brother brought up to me once. He said, I'd like you to ask your guest this question. So, and this is, here's the preface. I brought up Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney recently re-released Band on the Run, and it's called Band on the Run Underdubbed. So before they added all the bells and whistles, they went into the studio and it was Wings and Paul McCartney, and they did a bare bones recording of the whole album Band on the Run. And then the producer comes in and he adds this and he mixes this and adds this and so on and so forth, does these different things. And the album without the bells and whistles, the underdubbed album, is an excellent album. So it became more excellent by adding stuff. So here's the question. And this is from my brother, John, because it's a great question, I think. As an artist that has a hand in your own production, I'm sure, when is a song done?
What a question.
Isn't that tough?
Yes. Usually long before we think it is.
That's such a great answer. That is like the perfect answer for this question. That is like the absolute perfect question or answer to this question. I love it.
Yeah. So
elaborate. Elaborate.
When is more not necessarily better? And when to give space and when to add just the right thing that's going to gel it. And my approach has been to ask the song what it wants and then get out of the way.
Yeah.
And allow the process to move forward. Now, that process changed a lot for me when I started recording myself, because the stress of I'm paying for studio time was taken away. And a lot of the things that get created on my albums now weren't practiced, rehearsed, and then trying to nail it the first time. A lot of those things come up as the song is being produced. Right. So I might be like, you know what it's missing is goat hooves. That this song needs goat hooves. I actually just wrote a Krampus song for the holidays, and it needed goat hooves, you know. So when is it done? Good question.
I like what you said, that when the song tells you, you know.
Yeah, I do try to listen to the song and get my ego out of the way, and also be realistic about what can I afford? Like, if I had it all my way, I'd have studio musicians on each one of those instruments. Mm-hmm. And I certainly wouldn't be playing some of my own rhythm guitar. I'm serviceable, but I would have other people who that's their thing. I'd have them do that. And I would stick to the things I'm good at, like my vocals, my background harmonies. I play the Irish drum, the baron. So I love putting that instrument on things in a new way. Uh-huh. But if I was going to have djembe or some kind of percussionist, I'd bring somebody in whereas I'm really great on the drum, which is a unique instrument, mm-hmm. on the Irish drum. There's things that I would really have other musicians play on. And so there's I'd have this dream team and I'd bring in all these incredible musicians. And then there's the budget. And when you start self-producing, what's great is you have unlimited tracks. But I come back to Woody Guthrie, and this is through Pete Seeger down the line of quotes. Mm-hmm. Little story that I heard along the way. So I'm probably elaborating with the folk process. Woody Guthrie brings a song to Pete Seeger. It's "This Land Is Your Land." Mm-hmm. He says, "What do you think?" Pete says, "I don't know. I don't think it's your best work. It's kind of simple."
Yeah.
And Woody says, "Any damn fool can get complex. It takes a genius to obtain simplicity."
I love that.
And scene. You've heard "This Land Is Your Land" in every country, in every language. So I think most of the time we're trying too hard.
We do.
Most of the time we are trying way too hard, and myself included. And I need to remember, why does it need more? I'm a looping artist as well, a live looping artist.
Oh, okay.
And you have unlimited tracks, yes, but there is a certain point where you reach a point of diminishing returns. And so writing on the looper for deskhands and vocal, and I loop everything. I loop my drum, my guitar, my ukulele, my voice, all on the same song sometimes.
Yeah.
So I can create a tapestry of sound by the end without paying a band, mind you, which is lovely for dealing with their schedules or their personal issues. So that's a whole different style of creating. And how much does it need and how much does it not? Just because I have all those tracks doesn't mean I need to use them. And how do I then? There's math and science involved in that, because you need to add, you can only add one track at a time, and you need to do it at the right times and push the right buttons at the same time, mm-hmm. and fade things in and fade things out, because I'm mixing while I'm recording and while it's going out. At the same, it's very complex, and because I have a complex brain, my brain really likes that. and it keeps me from overthinking other things, because I write songs about overthinking because I'm really good at it. but just because you have those tracks, even live looping, doesn't mean you have to use them. And how do you best use them to create something that is magic, that can be very pared down? Like, there's people who just want to hear a guitar and a voice, mm-hmm. and that's more than enough.
And this, so, this cat in Oklahoma, they use the expression "chasing the bear," mm. and I think that's so vivid, because that's what we end up doing. We're running away from the bear. We're setting this up, and next thing you know, we're chasing the bear, and all it has to do, that bear just has to turn on you, and you're sunk. So quit chasing the bear. Just let him go. Let it go and let it be. But no, we're going to chase the bear. And sometimes I've got recordings of where people have chased the bear with sticks, and the bear says that's enough. And that, uh-huh. and then they submit that as their finished product. And I've done this. I try not to, because I try and stay objective. I mean, the Music of America podcast, this is what you want to put out to people. But there have been a couple of occasions I'll say, listen to what you sent me and just ask yourself if that's what you want put out on the air. And I've had two different artists that had to pare some stuff back because they wanted it to really sound really cool, but it was just too much,
That's right.
And sometimes you're stifling the very muse that's speaking to you, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and does it support the song?
Right.
Am I just...
I want to add chimes because I want to add chimes, but chimes don't fit there, dude. Take them out,
Right. Get out of the way.
Get out of this way. Love it. Okay, we got time for one more song. Talk to me about "Walking the Labyrinth," because that's my life. I'm walking a labyrinth all the time.
Oh, I love labyrinths. Every time I'm traveling around tour, if I see a labyrinth, I pull over, I walk it. I've walked quite a few at this point. And so this song was one of those songs that made it onto an album as a surprise. It was not scheduled to be on the album, and it's on the Carry Me Home album, which I took a lot of the looped live loop songs, took them into the studio, and then tracked them out. So very vocally rich album. I would take breaks. I was living in Santa Fe, New Mexico at the time, and I would take breaks because, okay, we all know, anybody who's worked with editing or sound or video on screens, there's a certain point where we have got to step away and go see the light of day. So I would take breaks, step away from the screen, and I would go walk in this park called Frenchie's Park in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And shout out to anybody who's been there. It's quite well known in Santa Fe. And there's this labyrinth that's like made out of earth. And I would go and walk the labyrinth. And because all I have to do is just sort of open up and the songs come in, even when I don't want them to, the song came Walking the Labyrinth. While I was walking that labyrinth, I went back home and I started tracking it, and it made it on the album. And it's become one of my favorite songs to live loop.
Really?
And I sing it quite often in shows, and it's got a real haunting, beautiful, warm feeling to it, and very earthy song. And I love writing songs about labyrinths. I have themes. Like, I love writing songs about trees. I've got a whole album's worth of tree songs, a whole album's worth of labyrinth songs. And I'm looking forward to someday compiling a whole album's worth of moon songs, you know.
Oh, that'd be
and
wonderful.
So this is the first labyrinth song that I wrote, inspired by the labyrinth in Frenchie's Field in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
And the song, Walking the Labyrinth, our guest from Freeland, Washington, Celia Farron, here on the Music of America podcast.
I am seen from here.
Walking the Labyrinth, Celia Farren, our guest here today on the Music of America podcast. And where does the time go? And it always flies by when I talk with artists that have a theater background, because you know how to do a podcast, because you know how to talk. And you know what to say.
You can't shut me up.
you know how to get in and out of rabbit holes, and I'm great at bringing you in. So, Celia, it's been a blessing and fun and wonderful, and can't wait to have you come either to Vermont or St. Louis and see you live. But in the meantime, this is the segment of the show that you just talk about you and how we can help you. We call it shameless self-promotion. So please, shamelessly self-promote.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I, as an independent artist, it's something we have to do. You know, it's not something that we necessarily like to do, but, you know, we don't have big billboards being put up by record labels. So my sense is, you know, if you enjoy what I'm doing, please go out into this big, wide, wonderful world and tell everyone, you know, tag people on the social media, share things. But if for some reason you didn't like it, just please do what your grandmother says and keep your mouth shut.
I always tell people, I heard this from Larry Gatlin. He said, hey, if you like it, you like our show, you like what we're doing, great. Go ahead and tell your friends, buy our records and albums. If you don't like it, then shut up. We don't need the bad press.
So. Exactly right. I did it maybe a little sweeter, brought grandma into it. But yeah. my secret fantasy would be if each and everybody out there goes and finds my music and downloads it or buys a CD. That's what I used to say. I used to say this. My fantasy would be if everybody here at the show takes something home off my table. Oh, and pays for it.
Oh, Ben pays for it.
And pays for it. That would be lovely. But
just so you know, these are CDs. I actually, when I go
I've
to shows, I actually buy CDs still.
People do, just not quite the same way. And that was really 90% of my income when I was on the road full time. So now my income has been my subscribership. So as I mentioned earlier, I write and record a song every week, and I make those songs exclusively available to my Patreon subscribers. I might release them later, but the Patreon patrons get them first. So you could go to my Patreon, patreon.com/Celia Farren, and you could do $10 a month and get access to all the backlog songs, which is over 240 songs, and all the songs that I continue to add. And then there's also, I do live stream concerts. I do chats with Celia. There's all kinds of wonderful ways you can get extra content from me there. So that's the number one thing. If you're going to do anything to support me, I would love it to be that. Okay. And of course, you can find me online. You can go, you know, do the YouTube channel thing. I've got lots of songs and material out there. And there's the best way to support musicians is directly right now. So, you know, there's Venmo out there. If you feel generous, just pop me some money sometimes here and there. I also teach voice. I do sound healing. There's the comedy aspect of my career. I have albums that are The Little Pink Fairy, the comedy. If you're prudish, don't get it. And then there's albums that are spiritual or for yoga or for meditation. There's something for everyone in what I do. So please, if you find me, don't stop looking, because you'll find lots of branches on the tree that you may not have known were there as I keep exploring that tree myself and sharing things with you. So CeliaFarren.com. I've got lots of shows this year, lots of traveling. I'll be in the Midwest in the spring, summertime. Then I go up to Newfoundland, Canada to do a wonderful retreat with my friend Judith Royal. I'll be in Arizona quite a bit. I'll be in California. I'll do this wonderful festival in Northern California in October called Hexen Fest.
Wow.
Planning to go back to Hawaii again this year. So I've got all kinds of things, and I'm adding those things to my website calendar all the time, CeliaFarren.com, social media. Look for Celia Farren Music and Comedy page on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I am not on TikTok yet, but watch for me there soon. So I'm pretty easy to find. However, I do need to say this. Early on in my career, I did not use my last name. And so some of my earlier music is harder to find. So if you look up Celia on Spotify, and you shared this with me earlier, Tom, there's sometimes a different woman's picture shows, but my music plays. I'm trying to fix that. And I'm working on getting all of these hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of songs out there in Streamland. So what I'd like to say about, if you want to really support independent artists, Most people are streaming, and I'm not saying that streaming is bad. I'm saying if you're going to stream, stream the living snot out of it. Make playlists for your pets and put them on repeat while you are doing your errands. Put them on repeat while you are sleeping at night, because we get 0.0007 cents every time you stream. And Tom, if you were to stream my Everyday Goddess song, you'd have to listen to it 2,700 times for that to equal 10 bucks in my pocket. So it's not that streaming is bad. It's that if you're going to do it, pick the artist you want to support and stream like the wind, because that's how we make the money, is numbers.
That's so good. You know, and that's the first time somebody actually broke the numbers down for me like that. That 2,000, I got to stream your song, not album, one song, 2,000 times for you to make
more than more like between 2,000 and 3,000 times for it to equal to equal 10 bucks for us. So it's about numbers, you know. Yeah. If you got a favorite jam song and you play it 5 times a day, and you're one of a million people who play it 5 times a day, okay, now we're talking. I've got grocery money. If you just, you know,
now I can
if
go one buy person, cheese. Yeah.
Now I can buy the cheese, right? And yeah, and the dough, with the dough. So it's numbers. And that's why there's all these algorithms, and we're trying to get our songs out there and get a natural following. But when the people who really want to support us start listening over and over again in numbers, that's when it adds up. It's a very different music business than when I started. Like we were talking about, you know, people used to buy CDs. Now they don't even make CD players in cars anymore. Everything's gone to streaming. And buy the CDs and get them signed. And you know what? You'll be so happy when you bought a CD and your power goes out and the internet goes out and you're crying because your playlists won't play.
Yeah.
Or your friends are crying because their player was, but you have CDs and you've got that boombox stuffed away in the corner, and you got batteries, and you've got music.
There you go.
A hard copy, you have music, and you have a much better, higher quality WAVE file versus an MP3 file. So there's all kinds of reasons to still buy CDs and support the artists and put money in their tip jar and hire them to come do a house concert and decide that you're going to buy their CDs for all of your friends for the holidays. There's so many ways we can support artists. Just do it.
There you go. Celia, you said it better than anybody. Just do it. You know?
And if you're thinking about it, don't sit there and go, oh, I'll do that tomorrow. No, do it now.
Yeah, do it right now. Because tomorrow is the labor-saving device of today. So do it now.
So true.
So it's true. Celia Farran, C-E-L-I-A, Farran, F-A-R-R-A-N, correct?
Correct.
CeliaFarran.com. And from there, you'll find everything. You'll find whatever you need to help support her art, and help her go forward and help her get back up to Vermont and get to St. Louis. So
right on. And I'm reachable. You know, I do my own stuff. So if you want to reach out to me, I will respond.
She's really good about that. I can testify.
Right on.
Thank you so much. Celia Farran, our guest today, wrapping up Washington. Tomorrow, join us. We're going to visit with Lady Miranda from Seattle here on the Music of America podcast.
You've been listening to the Music of America podcast. If you like today's show, please go to the website at www.musicofamericapod.com or our Music of America podcast Facebook page. Like us and follow the show and episodes. We tally the votes of all our shows, and the most listened to shows will be rebroadcast on our best of shows at the end of the season. I look forward to having you with us again and listening to the Music of America.